Bibles this evening, if you'll turn to 2 Kings chapter 3. Begin reading in verse number 1. Now Jehoram, the son of Ahab, began to reign over Israel and Samaria in the 18th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and reigned 12 years. And he wrought evil in the sight of the Lord, but not like his father and like his mother, for he put away the image of Baal that his father had made. Nevertheless, he clave unto the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which made Israel to sin. He departed not therefrom. Ahab, if you remember, was a very wicked king. And God had sent him into a battle to kill him, basically. And it was a battle back in 1 Kings chapter 22 that he went into with Jehoshaphat. At this time, Israel and Judah are getting along, which really is not a good thing. To me, from what I can tell, it seems as though they're getting along because they have a lot of the same sins. They're not getting along because they've both gotten right with the Lord. They're getting along because they accept each other's sins. Jehoshaphat wasn't as wicked as many kings that came along, but he was not stellar either. I mean, he had a lot of problems, and one of his biggest problems that he had was making friends with the king of Israel, who was wicked. Ahab was a wicked king. And in 1 Kings 22, again, we're not going to turn there, but they decide to go reclaim a piece of property. The king of Israel, Ahab, says to Jehoshaphat one day, "Hey, that piece of property is ours. Let's go get it. Let's start war with Syria," which they had peace with Syria. And they decided to go get it. And Jehoshaphat, who was perhaps a slight bit closer to the Lord, if that's even measurable, had said, "Well, hey, let's wait. We better inquire of a prophet and find out if this is a good idea." And 400 prophets told him to go, and one prophet told him not to go, and they decided to go, and that was where Ahab was killed. And here we have Jehoram, the son of Ahab, who is now reigning in Israel. And we have another similar encounter about to take place. Verse number 4 of 2 Kings 3, we'll read on here. "And Mesha, king of Moab, was a sheepmaster, and rendered unto the king of Israel 100,000 lambs and 100,000 rams with wool." This was kind of a tribute payment that he made to keep peace with Israel. "But it came to pass, when Ahab was dead, that the king of Moab rebelled against the king of Israel." He stopped making his payments. When Ahab died, Ahab was a hard man, and he feared Ahab, when Ahab died, he stopped making his payments. Verse 6, "And Jehoram went out of Samaria the same time and numbered all of Israel," which is a big problem, which God had told them not to do, which we read in the past that God had judged Israel for doing that under David. Verse 7, "And he went and sent to Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, saying, The king of Moab hath rebelled against me. Wilt thou go with me against Moab to battle? And he said, I will go up. I am as thou art, my people is thy people, and my horses is thy horses." And there's a whole message there, which is not the purpose of our message. Again, they're getting along, and it's not for good reason. And we see that in that statement, "I am as thou art." That's a problem, because these were wicked kings, and these were backslidden kings. And I don't think Jehoshaphat was quite to their degree. I think he knew a little more, because he's the one always saying, "Hey, let's stop and ask the Lord before we go to battle." I have my own opinions about that, but I don't think that he was asking the Lord permission, and I don't think he was seeking the Lord's will. I just think he knew enough Bible that he didn't want to get into trouble. And there's a difference between seeking the will of the Lord and knowing enough Bible that you don't want to get hurt, which many times is what we do. But here, he says, sure, I'll go. No qualms at all about going with this wicked king, getting himself and all of his people. Notice the attachment here. You know, we tend to think that we are our own and we are our an island unto ourselves, but he's dragging all of Israel into this, all of Judah into this, and all of Judah's resources into this. I am as thou art, my people is thy people, and my horses is thy horses. And so he gets involved, and they decide to go. Verse 8, and he said, which way shall we go up? And he answered, the way through the wilderness of Edom. I think the typical way, as best as I can see from studying, the normal way to go to Moab would have been through the King's Highway. That was the north to south way to go. But they're trying to be a little more conspicuous, and they're taking this side route through the wilderness of Edom, partially because they're going to take the king of Edom with them to this battle. They're going to bring on another crony here. And we see verse number 9, so the king of Israel went, and the king of Judah, and the king of Edom, and they fetched a compass of 7 days' journey. They figured this all out, and they came up with a plan that made sense to them, a physical plan, a logical plan that was based upon their thoughts, and they fetched a compass, and they took a direction. And so what we have so far is we have a wicked king of Israel. We have Jehoshaphat, who should know better, because he's done this same thing, this exact same thing with Ahab. If you'll just turn with me real quick to 1 Kings chapter 22, he's done the exact same thing before. In 1 Kings 22 and verse 4, Ahab says to Jehoshaphat, wilt thou go with me to battle to Ramoth-Gilead? And Jehoshaphat said unto the king of Israel, I am as thou art, my people is thy people, my horse is thy horse. Let's just go. Sounds great. He's done this before. And they went into battle, and Ahab was slain, and the people were scattered, and they started war again with Syria. So Jehoshaphat, really, who should know better, he jumps in. Along with them, we have the king of Edom. We're not told much about him, other than he's a deputy appointed. He's not Edom's elected king at this time. He's under the supervision of, I believe it was Judah at that time. They leave without seeking counsel from the Lord. They've got a plan of what they're doing. And really, if we boil it down, they're on a covetous journey. They were not at war with Moab. There was not a major issue to solve. The Moabites were not coming over and trying to enslave them. There was no issue. They have once again picked the fight. All because of some rams and some lambs and some sustenance. And that was all that was over. When you boil it down, when you just take it down to what it is, that's all that it was over. They're risking their lives and their horses and their people. And it's all because of some wool, some rams, and some lambs. That's all that it was. And so they're on their journey. But now we find, 7 days into their journey, they have a situation. There's no water. They had calculated everything. They had figured everything. There should have been water, because by my best estimation, this is the same course that Israel went through the wilderness of Edom, and they dug wells all along the way through there. If you read further back in the book of Numbers, you'll see where they had punched some wells that ended up being some good wells. And perhaps they had thought, well, we'll go here and we'll find water, and then we'll go there. And they had they had journeyed with a great host, it says. They fetched a compass, verse 9, 7 days' journey, and there was no water for the host and for the cattle that followed them. I'm sure that they had set out. Why had they taken cattle? Well, they were planning on going on a journey, and they perhaps needed something to carry their burdens and something to eat along the way, and they had planned, and the only thing they needed in their equation was water along the way. You know, we have a lot of needs along the way, and sometimes we just assume they're going to be there. There's a lot of things in life that we just assume are going to go okay. Things that are beyond our control. Things that are outside of our planning. Outside of our ability. And if we stop and think about it, there's a lot of things outside of our planning. Outside of our ability. Our health, that's outside of our planning and our ability. There's nothing we can do to plan our health. There's nothing we can do to plan the weather. The market. So many things. Outside, and they had gone on a journey, had not sought the Lord's will, and here we find them in a situation. Notice verse number 10. They begin to speculate, and that's what we do. When things don't turn out the way that we had planned, according to our plan, we begin to speculate. And verse 10, the king of Israel said, "Alas, the Lord hath called these three kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab." God has called us three kings together, brought us out here in the wilderness to destroy us. Now, we went because we wanted to go, but the Lord tricked us and got us out here because he wants to kill us. And they were, you know, he was speculating. Certainly, he knew how his father died. If we read the story, the Lord had allowed a spirit to deceive 400 prophets, convince his father to go to war when he shouldn't have gone to war, and he died. And he saw that. And his view of God is one of this angry God who's out to destroy him. That's how he views God. He views God as this being that exists, that he wants no part of, that is out to destroy him. That's how he views God. We see that in his speech. Now, verse 11, we've mentioned that Jehoshaphat knows enough Bible to think otherwise. He doesn't follow what he knows. He's like most Christians, really. I used to really look down on Jehoshaphat, and the more I learn about him, I think, that's me. God puts up with Jehoshaphat, that's why he puts up with me. Verse 11, but Jehoshaphat said, "Is there not here a prophet of the Lord that we may inquire of the Lord by him?" And how typical. How typical. You say, well, he's doing the right thing. That's what he should have done to begin with. How many times have we made up our mind? We set the compass. We saw that a few verses ago. We set the compass long before we talk to the Lord. And we don't talk to the Lord until we run out of something. We set the compass long before. And that's what they had done. They set the compass. The compass was set back in verse number 9. And here we are 7 days later. We don't have any water. Jehoshaphat says, I think we should find a prophet. We should go and inquire of the Lord by him. Jehoshaphat thinking in his mind, this is how I always usually avert things that I don't like. You know, it's not that Jehoshaphat is just really likes to know the will of the Lord. He just really likes to be comfortable. And that's how most of us are. How many prayers have we prayed for the will of the Lord, which was really just a prayer, Lord, find me the easy road? I'd have to admit, that's me. I don't like to be Jonah. There's no part of me that wants to be a Jonah. And Jehoshaphat, he, given a difficult circumstance, given a little bit of pain, a little bit of thirstiness, he remembers the Lord, which is typical. I mean, that really is typical Christian living in our world today. In our world today, we fetch a compass and we ask God later. That's what we do. And I put myself in that. Oh, yes, I often talk about my marriage, and my wife, she hates it when I do. I married my wife because I liked her. That's it. I really did. I was very spiritually immature. I married her because I liked her. But God was gracious to me. Gave me a wonderful wife and a family. But it wasn't because I had sat down first and really had figured out the will of the Lord. And we do so many things in our life that way. We've gone places we shouldn't have gone. We've done things we shouldn't have done. We've bought things we shouldn't have bought. We ask God later. We do that. So what does God do here? What does He do in this same wilderness that Israel wandered through? Three evil kings wandering through this wilderness. We would expect fire to just come down and just consume these three kings. Be done with them. Send somebody else to lead Israel and Judah and Edom. This is where the story just amazes me. It really does. The story amazes me. Reading in verse number 11, "And one of the king of Israel's servants answered and said, 'Here is Elisha, the son of Shaphat, which poured water on the hands of Elijah.'" Just the fact that Elisha was there in the wilderness they were in was grace. I mean, what grace! Just the fact that there was somebody they could go to and seek the face of God was grace. In that wilderness, the same wilderness that Israel wandered through. Israel had Moses as they wandered through there. And these three wicked kings, they should just get lost and die. But they have Elisha. That amazes me. They find Elisha there in this wilderness of Edom. Verse 13, "And Elisha said unto the king of Israel, 'What have I to do with thee? Get thee to the prophets of thy father and the prophets of thy mother.'" Elisha has zero patience for the king of Israel. None. He says, "What do I have to do with you? I mean, I would probably, you know, I don't like, there's a lot of leaders in our world that I do not like. But we're all just fleshly enough that we like to be around somebody who's popular and we would talk respectful." And Elisha had nothing. I mean, there was nothing in him for this king. He said, "What have I to do with thee? Go find the prophets of your mom and dad that would tell them whatever they wanted to hear. That would tell them to go wherever they wanted to go and do whatever they wanted to do, because I'm not one of them." And that was basically what he was saying. "And the king of Israel said unto him, 'Nay, for the Lord hath called these three kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab.'" We're here to die. God wants to kill us. And there's no reason He shouldn't have. I mean, there is no reason God shouldn't have killed them all. And verse 14, "And Elisha said, 'As the Lord of hosts liveth, before whom I stand, surely were it not that I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, I would not look toward thee nor see thee.'" He said, "I wouldn't even look at your face if Jehoshaphat wasn't here. And he's not much better. But if he weren't here, I wouldn't even talk to you." This is how Elisha feels. These are strong words of disgust. The behavior of the king of Israel disgusted Elisha. Frustrated Elisha to the point that he didn't even want to look at him. Verse 15, "But now bring me a minstrel." And it came to pass when the minstrel played that the hand of the Lord came upon him. The Lord came upon Elisha. And again, this is grace. Elisha was in the presence of people he couldn't even look at. And yet God had grace for them. People that Elisha couldn't even look at. This is amazing to me. Verse 16, "And he said, 'Thus saith the Lord, make this valley full of ditches. For thus saith the Lord, ye shall not see wind, neither shall ye see rain, yet the valley shall be filled with water that ye may drink, both ye, your cattle, and your beasts. And he delivers them a message of hope and a message of mercy. And he says, fill this valley with ditches because water's coming. The same wilderness that Israel wandered through. You know, and I compare it to Israel. And I think about Israel wandered through this wilderness and they found some water here and some water there. Just enough for them on their way. Where was it ever told to the children of Israel, dig some ditches, water's coming. And we would stand back as our judging Christians that we are, and we would go, well, if he's going to give the water to anybody, he should have gave it to the children of Israel. I mean, they were at least on the Lord's journey. These guys are, they're off on their own journey. We would stand back and judge, and we would look on with disgust and say, God is going to do something for these people? He should just kill them. I mean, who are they? He doesn't do this kind of thing for me. When was the last time he sent water like this for me? And we look on that way. But this story is an amazing story of grace. It truly is. I can see no reason that God should do anything for these three. But that's where we go wrong. We still cannot get out of our brain that somehow grace is earned. We cannot get that out of, no matter how much I read my Bible, I can't get out of my brain that somehow grace is deserved. It is not deserved at all, and this is what I see in this story. It is such a blessing to me when I read it. He said, make this valley full of ditches. He did not just supply their need, but he is sending surplus. That's the idea of a ditch. I live out towards farm country, and the further you drive out into Tuscola County, Tuscola means flatland. It's great for farming. It's terrible for getting rid of water. They have 30-foot deep ditches that they have dug every which direction out there. It's a massive system of ditches. What is that for? Surplus. Surplus. God is not just sending them what they need. He's sending surplus. Amen. What an amazing story. That he's sending to them surplus of water, more water than they can handle. And he's not just sending water. Notice the promise as we read on. Here in verse 17, he said, ye shall not see wind, neither shall ye see rain, yet the valley shall be filled with water, that ye may drink, and your cattle and your beasts. And he says, and this is but a light thing in the sight of the Lord. This is nothing. This is tiny in the sight of the Lord. And he will deliver the Moabites also into your hand. He ended up using the water to destroy the Moabites, to make them think that they saw blood in that valley. They'd never seen rivers in that valley. And they thought they saw blood, and they thought they would come in and just pick up the spoil. They came unarmed. They came just to pick up spoil. They thought everybody was dead. And they marched themselves right into the midst of the army, and they slew them. And it was a great slaughter. And the Lord blessed. But what a peculiar story. Because as we look back on this story, we have Jehoram, a wicked king of Israel. We have Jehoshaphat, who should know better. He's been on this same exact road before. I don't have patience for people who do things twice. I do not have... You did this before! God says 70 times 7. How many times has he just dealt with our same issues over and over again? We have Jehoram. We have Jehoshaphat. Who should know better? We have the king of Edom. We have them leaving and setting a compass without ever seeking the will of the Lord. We have them on a covetous journey at that. At best, a covetous journey is what they've gone on. They don't care about the will of the Lord. And yet God sees fit to send them a prophet and to send them water and to send them a surplus and to give them the victory. Really, this is the story of every Christian life. It really is. You know, at times, because of our victories that God has given us, we look like we have it together. You know, we look back at our life and someone who didn't know better would think that it was carefully planned out by us. We look at it and how God takes you from one thing to another thing, from a career to another career, and brings a person into your life to be your spouse or whatever that may be, or brings you to the right address at the right time. And, you know, it may appear that we've done well for ourselves, but it's all a facade. Every step of the way, it's been in spite of who we are. What a blessing I see in this story. There's probably a lot of other lessons that could be learned and pulled out of these things, but the one that just overwhelmed me was grace. Because that's the way we are. You know, we set out on a journey over and over again in our lives. We've gone on vacations we shouldn't have. We've bought things we shouldn't have. We've taken jobs. We've quit jobs we shouldn't have. And yet somehow, God is gracious. Jehoram, someone so wicked that Elisha couldn't even look at him. So I wouldn't even talk to you if Jehoshaphat wasn't here. Yet God has it in him to be gracious. Sometimes we get looking around at other people who, by all accounts, have not done well. And yet God saves their children, blesses their home. And sometimes we get upset about that. How can we get upset about that? Grace is just that. It's grace. It's never earned. That's the wonderful thing about it. Because you and I will find ourselves in a place without water, without whatever it may be. We'll find ourselves in a deficit situation. And you have no merit to ask for God's help. None. But that doesn't matter. That has never mattered. It's never been merit. And we might think that we might merit the help of God by a prayer that's spoken just right, or a life that's lived just right, or whatever it may be. It's never merited. And that's hard to get out of our mind. We go to the Lord with such a sense of unworthiness and think that that somehow will change the outcome. But it doesn't. Grace is just that. It's grace. Jesus gave two very audible invitations during his life. One of them, I preached from these this morning, from John 7:37 and Matthew 11:28, where Jesus said, "Come." In both of those times, he makes reference to a deficit. The one was, "Come unto me, all ye that thirst." They had a deficit. They didn't have to drink. They were thirsty. The other one was, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden." In both cases, there was a deficit. And Jesus invited them to himself with their deficiencies. He said, "Come unto me, and I will give. I will give." He has the supply. He has the surplus. What a blessing we find in this story. We have certainly not lived lives that merit any of God's help. We cannot live lives that will merit God's help. Where we get these ideas in our mind, certainly if we disregard God's laws, he will chasten us and we will have difficulty added because of that. And somehow we take that and we invert that, and we then determine that we will merit favor by doing well. And that's not the case. It's all of grace. Again, we've set out on many journeys. We've fetched so many compasses, made up our mind. You don't have to leave town to fetch a compass. You don't have to find the hog pen to be prodigal. You don't have to leave to fetch a compass. Many times we have fetched a compass in our mind. We have determined a direction long before we've ever sought the Lord. And yet, He has been gracious to us. He was gracious just to take away all the water and bring them to the end of themselves. Why in the world God would even care about those three kings is amazing to me. Cared enough, first of all, to starve them out of water. And then He cared enough to send them a prophet. And then He blessed them with what they needed. And it, to me, is an amazing picture of grace. God has been so merciful to us in our lives. We look like we have it together, and you know, maybe you're sitting there thinking, "No, I've never thought you had it together, Mark." And it's not a real estimation of our lives. But God is gracious all along the way, and that's what we need. Continue to come to Him and to seek His mercy and His grace in our lives and for the lives of our children.